Hi, and welcome to episode 101 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me to talk comics and more this week is none other than the artist and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello, Vince.
Hello, Dan. Now, as you can tell,
it was very weird talking like this.
What?
Okay.
Don't break the fourth wall, you prick.
I had to do the Tony.
Doing a Tony means so much on this show. As you can tell, the third wheel of our Morris Minor, Mr. Tony Esmond, couldn't make it this week, unfortunately. We shall miss him. I know he will be extra gutted he couldn't be here, as this week's show is going to be a format that he came up with. So, yes, we're doing an extra special sort of show this week, and it's going to be like Desert Island Discs. And we've got a really special guest for it, haven't we, Dan?
So indeed we do.
Should we just get stuck in?
You know, yep.
Let's not hang about here. So here you go with the special Desert Island Discs edition of the Awesome Comic Podcast. Okay, so we're here with our special idea of a format, if you can call it that. Can you call it that, Dan?
Of course, Ken.
We're essentially going to blame Tony for this. yes, it's Desert Island Comics, and we have a very special guest joining us for this. He's a writer who's gone from the likes of Small Press to now having the likes of 2000 AD, Doctor Who, Jennifer Blood, and the Avengers on his CV. And if that wasn't enough, he's currently scribing the new Inhuman series, Royals. It's our pleasure to welcome Al Ewing to the show.
Hello.
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 Thank you for joining us and deciding to help us out with this insane idea.
Yeah, this Island thing. Well, I mean, I've brought my picks.
Have you ever listened to Desert Island Disc before?
Yeah, not with both my ears. it's the kind of thing that'll sort of. I've definitely heard a few episodes, like on long car journeys or, you know, just in the background, if somebody's got Radio 4 on.
Yeah.
But I can't really remember a time when I've listened to, I don't know if somebody like Alan Moore ever did an episode, or Stuart Lee or somebody like that, but I mean.
They must have done.
Unless it's somebody like that, I can't really see myself.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
It's the kind of thing that's, you know, really nice to have on. But I don't know if it's something that I personally would like make time for.
No. So let's hope that our own version of it goes a little better.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony he's been listening to it all on iTunes recently. He said that like all of the archive from all over the years is available now on iTunes for Desert Island Discs.
Cool.
So I listened to a couple, so I kind of knew what I was letting ourselves in for.
I listened to a couple, and they seem to just cut the music out, which is kind of, isn't this the format based around the music? Like they played like 10, 15 seconds.
But
and then I kind of
prefer that because I quite like the interviews. Does that make sense?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, as you know, folks, we're doing something completely different this week. We've gone full on Cast Away with our very own Desert Island Comics episode. We need to think of some snazzy line for that, don't we? And as we said, it's like Desert Island Discs, but with comics. You know, what a crazy idea. This could go either way. This could be a regular feature, or we'll never do it again. Like everything.
There's
on
no food or water on the island. It's just got some comics.
Yeah, we've just
spent the last days.
Yeah, we've got some comics, a movie, and an album. Someone very kindly left a DVD player on the island, which is quite nice. But could we survive being left stranded on an island? And if we were, what three comics, what movie, and what album would we take with us to keep the loneliness and insanity from claiming our weak, fragile psyches? Everyone's got their choices, and we'll be discussing them soon enough. Before all that, though, in all reality, all of you, if you were left on a desert island, do you think you have what it takes to survive?
No.
Absolutely not. I no. I mean, is there even fresh water? Are we like drinking seawater here?
Oh, I'm sure. No, Tony wouldn't let.
Because you don't last very long without a water source.
Mm. So we'd have to find a water source, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Oh God.
This is getting. It's not going to go well.
Yeah.
Not like the old Tom Hanks film Castaway. You know, when he has to kind of take his teeth out with ice skaters. Oh, I'm God. Done here. Oh, God, I'd rather just drive my head into a rock. Yeah.
He didn't have fresh water though, did he? Didn't he have? It was all coconuts or something.
He had a bunch of FedEx stuff, didn't he? I've not seen that film. I was thinking of maybe making that my film because that might teach me some things about how to survive on a desert island. But,
doesn't he have to lick water off moss or something? It's been a few years since I've seen it.
I didn't know anyone from the IT crowd was in Castaway.
Boom.
Oh dear.
I could probably eat a bit of cream moss if it came down to it.
Yeah.
If it was that or like die of thirst.
Yeah.
I could,
true.
I could see myself making that choice. lick a bit of cream moss.
Oh. If you're on this island though, Al, like, and just say you didn't have a pad or a pen, you didn't have anything, how do you think that would be what breaks you? Because you're quite a prolific writer, aren't you?
I mean, I've kind of, it's sort of, I'm in that place where on the one hand, you know, I've got to be getting on with something, but on the other hand, it is a job. So I also have little bits of creative endeavor that are just for me.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So I don't know, I'd probably end up like building sandcastles or something, or like, just quietly going mad. but you know, I'd find something to do probably.
You could chop the comics up and then make your own comic out of
it'd be the kind of not having the internet that might do me in, just in terms of like not being able to, you know what's going on in the world anymore. Or maybe that'd be nice.
Sounds really nice.
It'd be a shock at first, but then it'd wear off.
Yeah.
And then you'd suddenly like be much happier. I don't know. but no, you can't really have the internet on the desert island. Otherwise, you've got like it makes a mockery of the entire concept.
You might as well just have a Starbucks.
And
just email, I am here. Please come rescue me.
Yeah.
So basically, we've got none of this. We don't have anything. That's we've been left on this desert island. But for some reason, we've got some comics with us. So what comic would you like to take with you? We'll do one at a time first. So Al, seeing as you're building sandcastles and quietly going mad, what's your first choice for your comic on your desert?
Well, I've been thinking about this and I've erred on the side of, because we can pick like one, we can have like one comic, but it can be a collected edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what it's got to be is something that you can find in the real world, even if you have to like go to Oxfam or like it's something that's now out of print but did exist once.
It can't be the whole run of the Walking Dead individual issues. You're not allowed that.
It's got to be in like in some kind of collected format.
Yeah,
but with that in mind, I am very much going with the rules of that old joke where somebody's the old kind of newspaper cutting gag where somebody says, oh, I'm just going to have the one drink, and they've like got a glass as big as a truck or whatever. In that, my first one is going to be the new X-Men Omnibus by Grant Morrison and various artists that I think taps out at close on 1,200 pages.
What?
Nice.
1,200 pages. It's every issue of New X-Men that Grant Morrison did. I don't think there's been another omnibus like it. I've actually seen a copy of this beast. A friend of mine got it. I've got it all on digital. I don't need to get the omnibus, but it does exist. A friend of mine had it. It is somewhere between 1,100 and 1,200 pages long.
Jesus.
And it's every single Grant Morrison New X-Men issue, so that's a lot of comics. And they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, he's I'm a pretty big Grant Morrison fan, and that was that was something I very much enjoyed at the time.
Mm.
So it's got a bit of a
Yeah.
Nostalgia hit to it as well.
Were you getting it monthly at the time when it came out as well?
Yeah, I was. I remember it was soon after. You see, this is the bit of the Desert Islandists where you start talking about, you know, the past.
Yeah.
But it was soon after, because I moved to London for a very short time before I moved to where I live now, which is York. And basically, while I was in London, I really got into the habit of, because before then, we didn't really have a local comic shop where I was growing up. I grew up in quite a small village. Mm. So to get comics, I had to sort of go off and kind of get hold of them from a comic shop in like a nearby city that was not super difficult to get to. You know, it was only about a half hour on the train. But it was enough of a faff that I only did it like once every couple of months. Or
yeah.
And then I get a big stack, and you know. But then when I was in London, because obviously London's drowning in comic shops, especially like in the centre, which is where I was working. I got into the Wednesday habit, and that was around. Well, it was Thursday back then, but that was around when New X-Men hit, and you know, I was plugged in enough to be aware.
Mm.
That this was coming, there might have been house sets or something. And yeah, so I just immediately grabbed it and just kind of, yeah, I was on board like monthly, every issue for the next, I think, several years. I mean,
yeah, he was on that for a long time, wasn't he?
It's a good like 3 or 4 years I think he was on that book.
I think I've got the trades up to about 7 or 8, and it's just fantastic bit of storytelling. So has the Morrison been a big influence in your work generally, Al?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to. I think if you take a look at my stuff, you can sort of see, you know, you can see little bits.
Mm.
I mean, I try not to because there's that bit where like an influence kind of crosses over the line into like a full-on ripoff.
Yeah,
I've tried not to go that route.
Yeah, influence becomes impersonation, doesn't it, for some people?
Yeah, I didn't kind of bring the monitors in or something like that.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, it's I'm pretty sure, you know, if I mean, I've been reading his stuff since I was pretty small. Since way back, since Doom Patrol, and Animal Man, so and obviously the 2000 AD stuff as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was
Were you reading much Marvel at the time, or was he someone that brought you into onto Marvel?
I think at the time I got into really into his American stuff was definitely the DC stuff. It kind of flip flopped a bit because I think I started off with Marvel, because I was reading 2000 AD, and then Marvel UK reprinted Secret Wars, which had all the superheroes in.
Yeah.
I mean, actually it was more like, you know, a fair selection of the superheroes, but it seemed like it had all the superheroes in at the time.
Mm. And that was at a time when that wasn't really happening either, was it?
It was very new. I mean, now in Crisis, I think my brother managed to get hold of some issues of Crisis, but that seemed, I don't know, I think at the time, you know, George Perez versus Mike Zack, and also the monthly versus weekly thing, and American comics were still very hard to get, whereas Secret Wars UK was really easy to get because it was just down in the newsagents. I got into that, and we kept half an eye on DC as well, because, you know, we were enjoying like the Superman stuff and the Flash. Mm. And a bunch of that stuff, and you know, there was a period where we were just getting all the comics.
Yeah,
it was very much a comic reading family.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, I think around the 90s we kind of fell off the Marvel wagon.
Hmm.
Around the time it started getting a bit more influenced by, well, I say influenced by, but it sort of gave birth to Image, and then you know, Image got really successful, and then suddenly,
yeah, there was a point where
they were trying to copy it.
Yeah, Marvel were trying to play catch up, weren't they? At a certain point, and some of their ideas.
Definitely a point where we were much more interested in the browns and the dark greens, and the occasional cyans of Vertigo.
Yeah,
I mean, whole page is just entirely coloured cyan. It was wonderful. but like, yeah, no, there was a period when we were like deep into Vertigo, and Marvel had kind of fallen by the wayside, because all of these great runs, like the Simonson run and the Simonson FF stuff, all of this had kind of things had, I don't know, in my eyes, gone downhill a bit at Marvel.
Yeah.
I know there are many, many people who absolutely loved that period, kind of after I left as a reader. Yeah. And, you know, I wouldn't want to say that, I certainly wouldn't want to say that they're wrong. Mm. And I've read a bunch of stuff since then that's like, oh, actually, yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
But at the time, yeah, Vertigo had my attention. Yeah. And part of it is like, when you're a kid, like grown-up stuff seems much more grown-up than it is.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was kind of really falling for some stuff that maybe wasn't quite as profound as I thought it was at the time.
And you find some titles that really get your brain working, don't they? I mean, I remember the first time, speaking of Grant Morrison, his Animal Man run, some of those Animal Man.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
The first time, I think that was reprinted, that was a backup reprint in a sort of, you know, when they used to do sort of A4 sized. DC
yeah,
reprint.
No, this wasn't Marvel UK. It was a similar thing.
Yeah,
it was like a DC reprint, and I only found out about that a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that these reprints are happening, but they were like, what was it? Kind of cardstock covers and
there's some really nice ones actually, and that was when I first discovered Animal Man, and like, you know, you get like a full color sort of superhero comic at the beginning, and then you got this crazy Animal Man where he's in a Looney Tunes kind of universe, and you know, that totally sort of blows your mind. That sort of stuff like really opens your mind to what comics.
There was all sorts of great stuff. I remember the first Doom Patrol we got in the house was the Steve Yowell guest issue, where he took over the art for an issue. And that is just, it's impossible to describe it, but it's like, you know, you've got this like essentially naked guy.
Where's this guy?
Talking about like Flex Mantlo. You got Flex Mantlo in there. You've got like these weird skull-headed things kind of appearing in smoke and talking and advertising slogans. It's all bookended by this journey through the catacombs underneath the Pentagon. We just loved it. All the Anyhow Story stuff. We were just. You know, that was it. That was incredibly exciting at the time.
So you've picked that massive sort of probably brain altering Grant Morrison X-Men run.
Yeah. Also on the desert island, I'll be able to use it to kill wild animals.
Yeah.
Like bash their brains in.
If you can lift it.
This is it. I'll have to use it to.
How does a book like that stay together? I'm just thinking, because there's so many pages in like the spine, or you know.
I think it's using some very advanced spine technology to like. I think it's really well bound. I mean, to be honest, you know, I'd need to have an actual physical copy in front of me and investigate it. But I don't think it's like the same kind of glue they just use in your average trade. I think it's properly. It's properly bound the way like a big Bible would be, or
it's certainly one that I think that of all our picks, if you dropped it in the water, it's not going to float. That's you've lost it, haven't you?
You can't escape on it.
Yeah.
So
it could be used as the foundations of some kind of shack or like Swiss Family Robinson style building.
Yeah.
If you wanted to sacrifice it in such a way,
No, that would work for me.
Yeah.
So when he finishes reading it, he'll build a palace out of Grant Morrison's.
I'll go and live in it.
Yeah.
Oh dear, amazing. Dan, what's your pick? What's your first pick?
Yeah, quite old school as well. It was on a Christmas Eve, and me and my brother used to have a thing where we gave each other our gifts on Christmas Eve just to kind of stave off the boredom. And yeah, he bought me a Spider-Man graphic novel, which was Spider-Man versus Venom, with by David Michelinie, if we can murder his name, and Todd McFarlane. And it's like about 6 or 7 issue collection of like the first introduction of Venom after the Secret Wars.
Is that the one where I remember that when Venom thinks he's killed Peter Parker in an explosion or something like that, and there's his...
Yeah, that ends like that. And it's kind of, I loved it as a kid, well, when I was younger. I'd read it so many times. Real kind of, wow, this is it really blew me away. I was like, Tom McFarlane's art, so really loved it at the time. I'm not such a massive fan of it now, to be honest. I don't know where that is, but it kind of brought a real life to the Venom character. It's very interesting, but subsequently it's kind of gone to pot by, I don't know, maybe even miswriting or just kind of overexposure. But yeah, at the time, really fantastic book. I'd probably bring it to the island just for nostalgia reasons if anything else. I thought my brother might be able to top that the next year, but he succumbed to peer pressure from my mother and bought like a 101 puzzle book. And I looked at him to detest. I still think about that to this day.
The relationship's never been the same. Yeah. that's positively Shakespearean, that kind of betrayal,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's... Yeah. 101 puzzle book.
Have you still got it, Dan?
Honestly, I think after I sort of opened it up and put it to the side, I don't think I've ever thought of it again, apart from in sort of...
It would have been quite handy on the desert island, though. It would have kept you active.
It would keep your mind alive.
Yeah. And then we could sort of cast it into the fire when we're done. Keep ourselves warm in the cold, cold nights.
You can do that with all of these books.
Yeah.
They're all very flammable.
Nice. So that'll keep you sane for a little bit, won't it, Dan?
Yes.
Yeah, good. I think my first pick is purely psychological, because I think you need some moments of levity when you're facing such dire consequences. So I would pick a collection of Calvin and Hobbes. I picked one off my shelf. It's The Indispensable Calvin and Hobbes. Those sort of treasuries are always good for the money. I think you can just pick them up, read them. They're endlessly, you know, because of the nature of the strips, you can just read one at a time. You know, you can make a book like that last forever, can't you? Or you can read it all in one go. And then
is that one with all of the Calvin and Hobbes in it?
This one that I've got hasn't got all of them. I know you can buy collections of all the books, like, because I've got it on my Amazon wish list. I haven't got it yet, but I'm not sure if someone's collected all of them.
In one,
because that would be an absolute monster if someone's collected all that. But the collections are usually, they're a decent size, aren't they? You know, you get plenty of pages. They're nice and big, black and white and full color artwork. If people out there listening haven't heard of Calvin and Hobbes, you got to sort your life out.
I mean, well, that's depressingly possible these days, because it ended quite a while ago, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like a good 10 years.
And I think
would have thought that would have run in a British newspaper. I know they run any old dreck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you would have thought that's ripe for being picked up.
Do you remember the Sunday Times?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was in that.
Oh, nice one.
That was that was a very odd thing.
Yeah.
That was very weird.
Yeah.
Was that a pullout, or was it attached?
It was
inside?
It was like a pullout. It was like an extra. It was like a magazine, and you know, an extra kind of thing.
A relative used to keep them for me.
Yeah.
And you've got to go around and see them, and then there'd be a whole stack of them. Mm. Get stuck into that.
And it had a bunch of stuff, because I think right at the start, they kind of. They were just like collecting together whatever they could get. So you had like Doonesbury, you had a bunch of Doonesbury, things like Doonesbury Sunday strips, which made like no sense.
I find a lot of those sort of strip comics that you find in like newspapers and stuff, though, if you come to them like fresh and out of the blue, some of them just make absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's no gag there.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Yeah. I think the reason that we don't see a lot more Calvin and Hobbes, though, is because, like... Have you seen that the documentary about Bill Watterson and Calvin and Hobbes?
No.
I haven't. I've sort of heard things about his views on things like merchandise.
Yeah, and because he won't... You never go see it on lunchboxes or plushies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you think of the marketing beast that this...
Could have been.
Could have been. And would still be to this day, wouldn't it? You know, with the likes of Funko Pops and all of this rising to the fore, you know, Calvin and Hobbes would still be front and centre of every comic book shop, I think.
I mean, you've kind of got to respect his stance, really.
Totally.
Oh, I do, totally.
Because he's got this kind of, this complete work.
Yeah.
Whereas something like The Simpsons is kind of slouching from one... And I don't know, you know, even 10 years ago, I was like looking at The Simpsons and thinking, oh my God, what's even happening? Whereas, and Calvin and Hobbes was like already in its grave, and just, that was fine. It was like a complete, I'm not even sure if, I know Bill Watterson's done like the occasional guest strip for other people as a kind of popping his head around the door thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's... I mean, what's he doing these days in terms of...
I have no idea.
He's just sort of doing his own thing, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not...
Yeah.
I've got to kind of respect that, because then it doesn't become a product, and it kind of...
Yeah.
It's got a bit more kind of weight to it, and life, you can always go back to it.
It keeps the integrity of the piece. It really keeps it sort of like small-town charm and innocence about it, I think. Whereas if you saw it plastered all over lunchboxes and plushies and stuff, it wouldn't be so innocent, would it?
Yeah, tomorrow's fish and chip paper. Kind of, it's quite easily to discard. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's, I'm done with that now.
Yeah,
and it was very like artistically uncompromising in terms of it was the Sunday strips. You couldn't take them apart and put them together in a new order.
Yeah.
Which I think most Sunday newspaper strips, you know, you've got dailies, and then on Sunday, it's got this thing where you can chop the front bit off because the first two panels aren't strictly necessary, and then you can kind of reorder the rest of it, and you can chop and change it to fit your newspaper, and you absolutely couldn't do that with Calvin and Hobbes. It just couldn't be done.
Yeah, but it's certainly going to keep me sane on this desert island.
Yeah.
no one steal it to make a fort out of it. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, don't burn it.
What was the name of the superhero character? His alter ego, Calvin's.
Oh God.
Stupendous Man?
Stupendous Man, yeah.
It was Stupendous Man.
Spaceman Spiff, Stupendous Man,
Spiff, yes. And also Bill Watterson draws some of the best dinosaurs ever.
Yeah,
it's very good. Every time he kind of takes that little side trip into realistic cartooning, it's always just, you know, beautiful when that stuff breaks out.
Yeah,
you've got a T-Rex flying the F-16.
Yeah,
it's great.
But obviously, all of his backgrounds are just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So there you go. There's mine. So Al, what is your second pick for your comic on this desert island that we're all on?
Right, my second pick it's on a similar theme in that it's a big collection of a newspaper comic. This one's a bit different though. This is the Posy Simmons Omnibus, which is collecting a whole bunch of her Guardian stuff. I'm just gonna look at it. Oh no, here we go. It's called Mrs. Weber's Omnibus by Posy Simmons. And basically, it's a connection of all that. I don't know if it's pronounced Weber or the Weavers or the Webbers, but it's a big collection of all or nearly all of her strips involving that kind of group of sort of suburban, kind of middle class bunch running from the late 70s. And I think she was still doing stuff with them well into the 90s. And then you started getting stuff like Gemma Bovary and Tamara Drew and the more the more kind of novelistic
yeah.
stuff. But it's a really good collection. And having, because I've got a bunch on my shelves, I've got a bunch of the kind of smaller Percy Simmons collections.
Yeah.
And they're all good, but it's having them all in one place. You can really see the kind of evolution. There's both that evolution of the art style, because Simmons is another one who is just really at the top of her game in terms of her cartooning and the and what she does with the format.
Mm.
It's another one where you can't take the strips, you can't really break them up. There are some, I think there's an early collection that kind of attempts to like break the strips up a bit and sort of do things with them to make them fit the page. But
so how big is it? How big is this book?
Oh, these books are generally a little bigger than. I mean, it's pretty thick. It's about as thick as.
Easy.
I'm trying to think of a. Trying to think of a comparison at this point, like a dictionary or a
bloody hell,
decent size, or the Pilgrim's Progress, decent sized dictionary. But in terms of the format, it's landscape format. It's about A4, roughly.
Blimey! So you could literally build a tent out of it if you just folded it. Is it hardcover?
Yeah, it's a hardcover. No, but it's a biggie, and it is another one of those where. It is kind of like the Calvin and Hobbes stuff in that, on the one hand, you can sort of see the evolution of the style and the refining of the ability. Although it doesn't have to be refined very very far, like right at the start.
Yeah,
you know, she's already amazing. I mean, she got her start in children's books, so she'd done a lot of illustration work already by the time she started cartooning. Basically. And also all the strips are kind of, they're very timeless as well.
Yeah.
So,
perfect, you know, for when you have no concept of time on a desert island.
Exactly. Yeah. You can just lose, once you've lost all concept of history, you can just go back to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's some strips from like, you know, the late 70s and the early 80s that are still fairly relevant today.
Yeah.
You know, which might depress you, but if you're on a desert island, that's fine, because you're just cut off from the world anyway.
Yeah.
We've had another castaway wash up on the island.
Yeah. Oh, look, Jesus mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always think of anything to do with middle class, I always think about Vince's home life.
Oh. Please. I'm as common as muck, mate.
Yeah, you said to Tony, have you bought a radio? You bought anything? Food? And he goes, nope. And he's got another package full of comics.
Yeah.
Yes, oh, great.
That's all I want. Yeah. Just some vodka and condoms. That's all you need, isn't it? Oh, no, you don't even need the condoms, really, do you? Yeah.
Look, there's only the four of us on this island. Look, this isn't helping, Tony.
We're on our own. You can listen.
Oh, we've subverted the format.
We've subverted the format while you're away.
Yeah. I'm having the top bunk.
Oh. Well, well.
Hope that's not code.
Al's already picked a new X-Men omnibus, so he's going to be living in a fortress while the rest of us are
slumming it on the beach.
Yeah.
What did you guys choose?
Well, you'll have to listen, won't you?
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Oh, God.
So I love the fact that Al's actually thought about both his sanity and like what he's going to do structurally with his books. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, I do have enough. I have enough paper here to kind of build some kind of papier-mâché dwelling.
Yeah.
With my own spit. We were talking about water, where we were going to get water from.
Yeah.
Where's
the water coming from, Tony?
You can build things, can't you?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to drink your own piss all the time.
No. You can drink it once.
Oh.
You can go through once, apparently.
Oh.
He's here for 2 minutes and everyone's already.
Is that according to Bear Grylls?
I think, yeah.
We are the podcast version of Bear Grylls, aren't we? No, I think that's fair.
Something I did learn from Bear Grylls by way of an old Charlie Brooker program was that if I don't know if you're having trouble with, I think it's seawater. If you do need to get some water in your body and all there is of seawater, you can do it in enema form.
Oh,
okay, that's fine, isn't it?
And yeah, that you can sort of get a pint into you the other way.
Oh,
and the water will absorb into your bloodstream and, you know, keep you going. And the salt you can poo back out of you. as Bear Grylls would put it.
Yeah.
I think so.
What
anyway,
am I going to do with this? Stick it up my arse.
It's either that or I've just murdered us all. But
we died with a bit of fun on our faces, yeah, didn't we? Let's face it.
We were sitting around a campfire, really thirsty, and then you've come up with the suggestion of pouring silver on our arse.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, we'll give it a
go. Technically, it was Bear Grylls who suggested
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
talking about Posy Simmons, I think there's some of her art in that cartoon museum exhibition that's on at the moment as well.
Oh,
so
cool.
There. Yeah, very good. So they made a film out of one of her books, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Tomorrow Drew they turned into a film. I've not seen the film, I've read the book. It's very good. I'm a big fan of all her work, pretty much. I don't know, I fell off recently. I don't know if she's... what she's been doing recently.
Well, I'm not so sure. I'd have put you straight down for a 2000 AD omnibus of some kind straight away.
Yeah, I did. I was thinking of that, but then none of them... I was explaining earlier of going very much in the kind of the bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Exactly how much comic content I can sort of...
He's in survival mode. On.
So it was...
Yeah.
It was only like the biggest editions and like the most comics pages. That's one of them.
Oh, cool. I don't know if you've covered it already, but you started in the small press, didn't you? In
I mean, I there was a period when I was like doing very occasional stuff for 2000 AD, like maybe, I don't know, once a year, once every 6 months, I'd get a few shocking. Right. And during that time, I did a lot of like small press stuff. And I think in the 90s, me and my brother did some kind of quite stupid stuff that I don't think ever really saw the light of day.
Right.
And it was all very much kind of goofing around with like superhero tropes. And the big thing was the idea of like the days when like the first page of a comic was basically the plot in miniature.
Right.
So you just get this like symbolic splash of like, I don't know, Superman has to eat a million donuts. Or Jimmy Olsen has to, you know. Yeah, Superman's holding up like a what is the famous one? Superman's holding up like a bathrobe that Jimmy Olsen gave him as like a Father's Day present. And he's like burning it with his heat vision and saying, "I'm incredibly disappointed in you, you horrible person." And like Jimmy Olsen's all like, "Oh no, Superman's my dad now, and he really hates me," and that's what this story's about.
Yeah, we've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's you know, and so we'd sort of riff on those. We do these like, kind of one panel comics, essentially.
Right, cool. Did you do some stuff with Bolt and Future Quake and those guys? I think.
Yeah, I did a couple of things for Future Quake, like just kind of. Again, this was during the time when I was sort of sending off Future Shocks, and you know, not all of them were getting in. So I was kind of trying to keep my hand in, keep practicing. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of people in those early Future Quakes who've now sort of ended up in prog on a regular basis.
No,
they had some. They did have some really good people. They had a couple of wankers, me, namely, in it early on. I remember you from a Bristol convention now. I think you were doing... You might have been on their stall for a bit. I think we had one opposite. Seem to remember you from that. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that'd be about right. That and Solar Wind.
Yes.
Which was absolutely genius. I remember that. I'm sorry that's not around still.
Yeah.
I do have the collected edition somewhere on my shelf. So, you know, it lives on in that form.
Right, okay.
Maybe that should be one of my final choices.
Yeah, you can always tell the people on Desert Island Discs who choose their own records. They're always sly, you know.
Well, somebody did suggest to me that I should like take this opportunity to plug my own stuff. But I think
you bring books you've written. Yeah,
yeah.
To be fair, I wrote stuff years ago. I couldn't tell you what it's about. I read it and think, who the fuck wrote this? You know.
Yeah, no, that happens. I mean, a lot of the time I'll pick something up that I've written like years ago, and I'll read through it and I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. This is all right. Yeah.
Wish I was this
good. Yeah, yeah. It'll be either that or like I'll notice some like really terrible clunky bit of dialogue in it. I'll be like, oh no, now it's ruined. But yeah.
So you were still writing Small Press while you were with 2000 AD.
Yeah, well, it took a while before I kind of had enough work to stop.
Right.
See what I mean? In that now I don't really have... I mean, I'm being kept very busy at the moment. I don't really have time But, yeah, no, it's... I did do another Small Press comic recently.
Right, okay. What was that?
That was for the last year's Rose City Comic Convention in Portland.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I was there kind of as the guest of Jane Miles Explain the X-Men.
Oh, yes, the podcast,
And so to kind of mark the occasion, I did a little X-Men kind of mini-comic that, you know... it was basically like it was, you know, photocopied stuff. I'm not even sure I was selling them. It was kind of giveaway thing more than anything. Mm. But it was basically just a quick riff on something I'd heard of David Wynne, which was that before Ian McKellen was in the running for Magneto, Sean Connery.
Oh, okay.
God, serious consideration.
Wow, okay.
So there's a lot of Charles. Yeah. Charles Xavier. Yeah. You and your student Scott Shamish, a.k.a. Cyclops, have stood in the way of my magnetism. Doing a lot of that, and I just, you know, made fun of Sean Connery's accent for like...
You do it well.
Pages.
That's a pretty good version, I will say.
Yeah. Now, I got asked a question. Have you ever dressed up as a monkey at a convention, Al?
I have dressed up as Tharg.
Oh, have you? Oh, okay, that's what my friend remembered. Yeah.
I never dressed up as a monkey, I don't think. Unless I'm... I mean... How would that even come up?
naturally, Tharg was fine. How did the Tharg one come about?
The Tharg one came about was because they needed somebody quite tall to basically. Oh no, it was they wanted Tharg to be on the panel, and Matt Smith entirely rightly didn't want to do it. And of course, the real Tharg was busy foiling aliens in space, so he couldn't. I had to put on this rubber Tharg mask that they'd that they'd sort of kept around since the '90s.
Rubber that has now been destroyed like because
my
band.
Beard, my beard basically eroded it from the inside.
Oh,
this is the sexiest show so far, I think. I've got to be honest with you.
for some niche market. Thug play, very popular. Certain parts of the internet. But it's I think the last time I had to put on the jumpsuit as well. Which was just incredibly annoying. And after that I said, look, I'm not doing it anymore.
Did it get to the point where they thought, oh, Al will do it, he's done it before?
Yeah, no, pretty much, yeah. It was that point. And I think it got to the point where like I'd kind of had enough because you know, I was like bellowing as Tharg, and like so I had a sore throat all the day after, and I never got to talk about like any of the stuff I was doing in the comic. It was all like Tharg stuff. So finally, you know, they had the mask and it was like, look, I'm not putting the mask on, and we ended up holding up the empty mask and saying that Tharg couldn't be here because he was undergoing the shedding. Where he sheds his old skin. Which is, you know, if you've read all your 2000 ADs, that is, that is a real thing.
Very cool.
So yeah, that'll probably be it. It'll be Thug.
Nice. No, I vaguely remember. And then my table mate I used to share a table with, and didn't he used to dress up or something? And I went, oh, I'm not sure. Yeah, so that sounds about right. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever like dressed for a con particularly. I don't know.
You're always naked at a convention, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You're never dressed.
This is why I'm no longer allowed. No, I'm not one of these people who, there are people who wear suits to conventions and they do very well out of it because, you know, they have their look and it's great. Yeah. It works, you know. Grant Morrison wore that white suit for a while. Kieran's always
in it, obviously.
I did hear that. So I did yeah. read that story.
Yeah, me too.
In Brian's book.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Kieran's got great taste in suits, and he's got that one now he wears that's got skulls all over it.
Right, amazing.
so he can be extra goth. But yeah, no, there are a lot of people who kind of wear suits and do well with it, but I don't think I ever. I don't know, maybe once or twice,
right?
You know, to try it out, but.
Yeah.
I think usually I've got this brown leather jacket on. I always wear to conventions, and that's pretty much so people can point me out if they need to.
Right. Yeah.
Like if,
maybe we should start dressing up, guys. I don't know. Do you think we should?
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
I know what would happen. One of us would dress up smart, and then the others wouldn't, and then just take the piss out of them.
Yeah,
that
would be pretty much how it would be. Yeah.
That's a very accurate. Yeah, something that would happen.
Now, I can see a storm on the horizon. So, right now, I want to know what your next book is, Al Ewing.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, I've got one more. And this one, the last couple have been kind of big in terms of, like, number of pages.
Yeah.
And this one, I think, is just going to be, like, quite sizable. Just as a really big object. I basically picked like three books that I can really smash the creatures of this island with to like establish my absolute dominance over them.
Yeah.
Create like an empire of the beast. Well, I'm not saying that I will smash you all with my enormous comic.
Careful how you phrase that, Al.
But I am saying that if you turn against me and my empire of beasts,
there will be
consequences.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is one I don't actually own but would like to.
Right.
And it's one of the IDW artist editions.
Oh.
And there's a lot to choose from here because you've got the Mazzucchelli Born Again, you've got Walt Simonson's Thor, you've got a bunch of Will Eisner stuff,
Kirby,
Davis,
John Byrne as well. Yeah,
and that is the one I'm picking is New Gods.
Oh, good.
Jack Kirby's New Gods, the artist edition. That's got New Gods 1 and 2. It's also got 5 to 8, and I think that means that it's got my absolute favourite non-Marvel Jack Kirby story, because I can't put this up against Galactus or those amazing Captain America issues. It's certainly probably definitely my favourite Jack Kirby thing that he did for DC, and that is the Glory Boat, which involves some castaways. It involves a whole bunch of normal people sailing around on a raft after their cruise liner sinks, and they get mixed up in the New Gods, and it's all a metaphor for Vietnam. And yeah, basically the New Gods just show them a really cosmic time. To the extent that one of them gets killed and then has his face remade by the Deep Six, these weird fish enemies. And yeah, and there's stuff like there's basically a cosmic cube in there.
Right.
Thrown in the mix. There's a cube, a glowing cuboid thing that I think Light Ray calls it an Infinity Cube or something, or
right.
It's some special New Gods thing, but it's basically a cosmic cube.
Yeah.
And there's a bit right at the end where the boat they're all marooned on gets turned into this giant cosmic missile, and Light Ray and Orion are like standing on it, yelling about the power of the source. I'm making it sound ridiculous, but it's brilliant.
Well, Kirby then, is all about big ideas, isn't it? It just
goes off, and you know they fly off on their missile and they leave the remaining humans behind. they just leave them to kind of, you know, live out the rest of their lives wondering what that was all about and, you know,
how they
reacted to it.
I think New Gods was the first comic that I actually spent more than a couple of quid on as a kid to buy back, you know. It's just incredible.
It had those amazing reprints where you get like two issues at a time in this beautiful, with new covers. And
they did. I remember that now. Yeah.
Gorgeous new covers.
They're sort of backs to paper as well, weren't they? Yeah.
And it ended up in the Hunger Games, which, I mean, at the time, you know, I was only young at the time, so like there was part of me that was thinking, man, this, you know, by that stage, Kirby was getting pretty old.
Yeah.
But it's still. It still just holds up incredibly well, and just in terms of the, you know, the kind of themes and the metaphors, and you know, even right at the end of writing, like the end to his big story, you know, Kirby's not shying away from like the concerns of like that moment.
Yeah,
you can tell he's really into like, you know, the march of technology and how how, you know, technology is like replacing people, and how it's replacing people on the battlefield.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the Hunger Dogs. You know, it was what,
it's incredible. 80s. Yeah,
and it's all about drone warfare.
Mm.
It's like amazingly prescient. So yeah, I mean, you know, Jack Kirby.
Yeah, I mean,
he was the king.
Yeah, I absolutely freaked for that stuff because he'd come from Marvel, and we all were really surprised that he jumped ship, weren't we? You know, and you had all this, and you had OMAC and the, you know, what else did he do? Demon, which is incredible stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember it, Commandy as well. Oh my God, how good was that? You know. Mm.
I need to read Commandy. This is where I admit that I've only read a couple of issues of it. But it's got an artist edition as well, so you know, if you could find that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how in print these things are. I suspect you'd have to, you know, go on eBay or pay through the nose for it. But,
it depends which one it is. You can get some a little bit cheaper, but generally they're about about 100 quid, aren't they? Sort of.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Cool.
Yeah, I've got a Tarzan one, Joe Kubert Tarzan one, which is just amazing. And I bought the Silver Surfer one as a present this Christmas, the Buscema one.
Cool.
It's gorgeous. Oh, very nice. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah.
And
really, really.
You could kill a man with them. Is that what
you could, yeah. You could live. Yeah.
This is why I want them on my island.
Yeah.
As weapons. My island now. I hope you're paying attention to that little shit.
Yeah. You've become quite sinister. Is this?
Just because I have raised an army of beasts.
Yeah. We started out of Desert Island Discs and it's gone into bloody Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. I'm now living in a hollowed out copy of New X-Men The Omnibus.
Yeah. He's eating Vince's flesh off the cover of the last edition.
God. What a way.
I mean, Kirby's 100th is coming up soon. There's a rumour a certain podcast might be doing a special episode on it, but I'm a huge fan of his stuff.
No, I'm very, very appreciative that I get to work with Galactus.
Oh, of course, I read that issue where he's just lying on his back, ignoring doing anything that he wrote. Brilliant, yeah, really liked it.
Well,
yeah.
he needed a rest after the pulse pounding events, True Believer. I think the next issue is like an all Galactus issue.
Oh, genius!
Nice. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. It's gonna be really like we've got Ord back for another issue, and it's really like. For that one, it's got this really Euro sensibility to it that I just love.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, a kind of almost, it's almost like a Mobius thing, or like
I was going to say the Galactus looks like the Mobius Galactus to me.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be a really fun issue, and then nine travels back, so travel fans can rest easy. he is coming back, but we get another issue of awesomeness from Ord Firth.
Oh, brilliant.
So it's pretty cool. I've been very lucky with the Ultimates. All the artists have been like top notch.
Yeah, you're getting great reviews, dude. It's a brilliant series. Yeah.
It's a fun time. It's a fun time, and I think it's been it's been announced now that issue 10 is now issue 100.
All right,
so,
cool.
We're everything squared now. It's like Ultimate Squared, everything squared.
I mean, what did you do? Did you get a meeting where someone said, "Right, you've got to base this whole issue on the other side of the shield. What are you going to do? Is it that way, or do they tell
it
you?"
It was no. Basically, the way it works is like, do you want to tie into the event? Is the first thing.
Yeah.
With the kind of thing that, I mean, that might, it might be changing now, but certainly up until this point, the right answer if you want a nice little sales bump and if you want more people reading your stuff is like, yeah. And to be honest, I've never really had a problem with tie-ins because I just kind of do what I want to do anyway.
Yeah.
But like tie it in, and it always fits in. They're always like, there's always a way to get it all to fit in, and like, so I'm still telling the story that I want to do, but I'm also telling a little piece of this other story.
Yeah.
And I think with this one, I kind of wanted to have a breather issue right after like the first six issues. I wanted to have a little breather issue and just kind of prepare for the big war and sort of man up. And I knew there was going to be a Secret Empire thing. I knew like roughly how like the shield was going to work, and I'd sort of ask questions like, you know, okay, how does it keep America out and all of this stuff?
Yeah.
And I ended up it ended up being like a nice sort of kind of emotional kind of a breather issue, but also a sort of a chance to like get a good look at a couple of the characters and sort of
to me it's almost an opportunity to start something as well. You've used that sort of MacGuffin to use it as an opportunity to develop the relationships, you know, between America and Galactus, and you know, Carol and a couple of the other characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is episode one when you get to eight in however long it is. It's probably not very long now. I don't think it's next week, but it probably not long after.
Okay.
I don't know exactly when this month it drops, but I think it is this month.
Right.
But yeah, that's very much, you know, from where Galactus was, you know, he's moving right along, and then, you know, it's building up and up. So, yeah, it'll be good. It'll be a fun time. That issue 100 is going to be pretty huge.
Oh, good. Yeah,
I've blocked that one out, and yeah, there's some really really big stuff happening in that. So
you're gonna have a big fold out to beat the previous Ultimates fold out. Anything?
I remember way back on Ultimates 1 there was talk about maybe doing a fold out, but we never ended up doing it. It was just, you know, it was like, nah, we can't really do a fold out. But we were thinking of things, you know, how could we use a fold out that's, you know, not just like, here's a four page spread, which I've done a couple of times. I've done that thing a couple of times of like the Stranko thing where you buy two copies and put them together.
Okay.
But not in Ultimates, but I've done that in a couple of other places. But no, we were thinking, I think Wilson had the idea of like, we could have like a vertical fold out.
Oh,
where
nice.
Like you kind of fold it vertically, and so Galactus is like three times the height of a normal page.
Oh, nice. Yes, do that. Yes.
That would be cool. But no, we didn't end up doing that. It just wasn't, I think sort of to get a fold in, it's gotta be, I don't know, there's certain like thresholds that need to be
to
make it like worthwhile kind of thing.
Okay, yeah,
because I don't know the exact ins and outs of it, but
what do you mean, to go to the printers and go, I'll buy
Yeah, go to the printers and basically say, we want you to like rethink, you know, to change stuff around.
Cool. Yeah, I get you.
Make it different. But yeah, there might not be any fold outs, but there's gonna be some big, like, I mean, this is probably gonna be the last hurrah for me for double page spreads for a while, because there's a few coming up in Raws, but I'm becoming increasingly aware that like on digital, they kind of have the reverse effect.
Yeah, I read the Royals on digital, and it works really well. Yeah, I have to say, I see what you mean about a double page spread. Yeah.
So I'm trying to I still ask for double page spreads. It's pages 2 and 3. It's the Kirby thing again,
yeah. Right?
Because he always used to do that, and it's just a really good way of kind of coming into an issue.
Yeah.
So I still use it occasionally for those.
Yeah, you see it in his war books. You saw it in loads of stuff he did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Everything comes back to Kirby, doesn't it, Al? That's how I was looking
at it. Yeah. Oh, no, he's like, we'll be like learning lessons from him.
Definitely.
Yeah, for another 100 years.
Has he been quite a big influence on your, the Inhuman stuff?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, good point, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. That and, that's David Bowie, really. I was just on an Inhumans podcast yesterday, and they started asking about all the Bowie.
Right.
And I do listen to David Bowie while I'm writing it. But Kirby's a big influence on the Ultimates. Trying to do that thing where you don't really want to imitate Kirby, but you want to be inspired by what he did.
Yeah.
You want to kind of make a bunch of new stuff. Or at least do new things with the toys, you know. Yeah. At the bare minimum, do that. But if possible, make a bunch of new stuff.
With the Royals, for me, Al, I was thinking more a sort of Euro comics sensibility. Because far-flung future thing, haven't you? You know.
Yeah, that was very much the 5,000 years in the future stuff. That was very much based on kind of half remembered thoughts of Mobius and that kind of stuff. And I think in the first script, I basically said introducing the far future element. I kind of said, yeah, look, the word for these pages is Eurocomics. You know, it's right. this is like a heavy metal future.
Yes, that's how I definitely saw it. Yeah,
So yeah, no, that was definitely an influence there.
Was there any prose work that influenced you around that? I mean, I was seeing a bit of sort of Herbert or Dune type sort of visuals.
I guess I've never read Dune.
Right.
I probably should get around to it. I'm more of a Philip K. Dick. Vonnegut. Those are the two big, and Harry Harrison,
okay. Bit of cynical sci-fi,
I like my Harry Harrison. Always fun, and the Stainless Steel Rat in 2000 AD was such a good script.
So good,
yeah.
Was it? I reread Technicolor Time Machine. Is that the one where they go back to the age of the Vikings?
Right? Yeah,
that's a brilliant book.
It is great.
Yeah, really good.
It is fantastic. Yeah.
With that in mind, I mean, you brought up David Bowie just a second ago. Would a David Bowie be your pick for the album that you'd have on the Desert Island?
Yeah.
I was thinking of this. I was thinking of Diamond Dogs as my pick for the album, but I think I'll probably go I'll probably go towards sorry.
Public Enemy.
Losing the thread a bit. I was going to say I'm going to go more towards quantity as well as quality. Are we allowed compilations for this? Or does it have to be an album?
We're allowed greatest hits, we're allowed whatever you like. Yeah.
Okay, in that case, there's a Pet Shop Boys greatest hits that I really enjoyed, which had a whole bunch of, it was called Pop Art, and it came on several CDs.
Right.
And it was a really good kind of selection of Pet Shop Boys stuff. I'm about to start eating, so if you hear chewing,
you're going to say singing for a second there. That's what I was about.
Sorry.
Well,
cool. Okay.
We shall let you go, Al.
Well,
feast.
Go and feast.
I will quickly. Yeah, sorry. It is tea time. I should quickly mention the movie. My movie would be The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Oh, brilliant.
Good choice.
I'm going to that film.
It's one of my very favourite films, and it would serve me well on a desert island because it would prepare me for the strange animals that I would meet there.
Which are going to kill fish. K kill yeah, with one of your many books.
I kill and trade. Train and to kill.
And the noise is coming from Dan's tent as well. Probably...
Oh, anyway,
thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, Alan.
Sorry, I have to run off, but it's been fun, and I'll listen in on the rest of the Desert Island Choices.
Thank you, Dave. Good to speak to you. Right. Yeah,
take
I'll
care.
See you
guys later.
Take care.
Right, bye.
And that was Al Ewing.
Yeah,
thanks for joining us, Al. Yeah,
yeah.
The storm swept him away.
Yeah.
It always reminds me a bit of Alan Moore. I always think he sounds a little bit like Alan Moore sometimes. Okay. Yeah, which isn't a bad thing. Yeah, he's sort of considered, isn't he? Mm. Yeah, it's always amusing. Yeah.
Big Good. Concepts, big ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very very thoughtful in his words, which is 100% more than we normally are.
Yeah.
I thoroughly recommend the Ultimates and the Royals. Very good.
The Royals,
really
is,
good stuff.
Yeah. The Royals is awesome. I caught up on those this weekend. Very,
yeah, very,
very
good.
For someone who doesn't know anything about the Inhumans, it's a good series to get into.
Yeah, proper out there sci-fi as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right then, Tony. Al's been swept away by the storm. You know, he was becoming a bit of a dictator. In his giant fortress made out of new X-Men, and he was threatening to kill me with an artist edition. But what is your first choice?
Before I do it, can I just ask what you two guys chose?
Okay, for my one was Calvin and Hobbes, a collection of and Hobbes.
Nice one.
Dan's... Mine was an infinitely more lowbrow. It was a collection of Spider-Man versus Venom comics.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there you go. But what is yours? I bet this is well thought out. Come on.
God. I'm going to go for size again. Size matters. We all know that.
Yeah.
I'm going for Cerebus, Church and State, the second volume.
Nice.
Oh, if I'm stuck on an island, I want something with a bit of weight to it, similar to what I think Al has already talked about.
Yeah.
Something that's good to stare at, you know, it's beautiful artwork and stuff like that. And something that is intelligently written for me. And, I couldn't think of a better... They sit in front of me where we record, and I couldn't think of a better book than this to choose. Church and State, it runs through two volumes, and I think I'd started reading Cerebus around the start of it, I think, probably. So I didn't start with Cerebus straight away. You know, I wish I had issue one, because I'd be a rich man now.
Yeah.
So I haven't. The second volume runs from 81 to issue 111. And it was, I think it was this period, just before this volume starts and during it, that I really fell in love with it. It's a period of comics where Claremont was kind of the king. He ruled the X-Men and he had stuff like Secret Wars. And, you know, the comics landscape was beginning to change. And Sim really doesn't hold back. He aims and fires at comics, characters, you know, creators and the characters they created. Rock stars, I mean... sort of various rock stars appear in it. Religion is a big target in this book, and seemingly a lot of people who annoyed him. To be fair, you know, there's little sort of parodies of people throughout it. At the time I was enjoying this, I met Sim and Gerhard, who does a lot of the extra art and a lot of the backgrounds. He's famous for doing some really great buildings and stuff like that in it. I met them at UCAC, and he was such a fucking outrageous character, you know, sort of. A, you know, really, really big character who went on about going to titty bars, I think, as I've mentioned on a previous episode. And I was sort of reasonably young and sort of wide-eyed, you know, teenager who my father had dropped off at UCAC. I began to sort of realise that you could be a rock star and be a comic creator, you know. I know he's had some... I don't know if you know much about the life of Dave Sim. Have you ever read into what he's...
No.
About? Well, I mean, these comics are incredibly well-made, and they're just, I mean, we were talking to Pat's friend, weren't we, at that meal after the 2000 AD, and he was really into it. But he's got some strange ideas. I'm just going to say that. I think he, at one point, he decided to create his own religion, and he sort of combined Judaism, Christianity, and Islam to make his own religion. I don't think that's a reason to hate him, to be fair. But he does go on quite a lot of sort of diatribes about subjects that, you know, perhaps he shouldn't have done. I don't know. Well, everyone's to their opinion, and he's allowed to say it. But he don't off rattle on sometimes. Cerebus it was a huge and a brilliant achievement, and ran from December 74 I'm going to say a lot of people felt that it lost a bit of steam towards the end. I found it a bit ponderous at points, but 300 issues, you know, is not insubstantial, you know, a creation, is it? You know, incredible thing, really.
Hmm.
For those who don't know, Cerebus is an aardvark, anthropomorphic character. Sometimes he's dressed in a little waistcoat, sometimes he's naked, and sometimes he dresses up as a pope or a king or a Cimmerian. He refers to himself in the third person, which always makes me warm to someone when they refer to themselves by their own name. That's what Tony thinks. And he also discovered partway through that he's a hermaphrodite and he can give himself a baby. Don't know how that quite works.
No, yeah.
It started as a sort of pastiche on Barbarian comics and especially Conan, and it swiftly moved out into sort of wider circles and became very funny, very dark, very satirical, very political, and very sort of sexually driven. The world in Church and State is more of a sort of, it's situated in a wider world than some of the following volumes. They're big phone books of volumes, you know.
Hmm.
I can't remember how many pages are in this, but some outrageous amount. When you think it's, you know, 81 to issue 111, that's a lot of comics. To a certain extent, Cerebus is kind of a pawn of the story, and he's sort of swept along by it, and there's huge long sections where he doesn't speak, you know, issues after issue, and he becomes this sort of grumpy, opinionated metaphor and a little bridge to certain narratives being told. I mean, there's whole sequence in this where he's just flying through the air and climbing up cliffs, and you know, but it is very intelligently told and it's very imaginative, and I think it's done in a way in comics that you don't really see these days, in that he allows himself to take so long to tell a story. And for many years, many years, Cerebus was a huge selling book. You know, he earned a lot of money out of this and enjoyed himself a lot.
Yeah.
And he dropped off a little bit towards the end. Sim's got a great and a beautiful line, just an incredible sort of creation of character. People tell stories through very few words, and Gerhard just was killing it on these sort of beautiful backgrounds. It's full of political politics and huge shots at organized religion, which is always good and always makes me laugh. It's just over 1,200 pages long. There's like, you get bits like there's huge drawn out sections where he will just look at people and people will look back at him, and then something will happen and he looks away. And this goes on for sometimes, you know, page after page after page, but it's done. It's never boring, you know. He never does it so it's boring. And you follow them, and you follow the thoughts in his head through the artwork, which is incredibly, incredibly hard thing to do, I think. Characters are often caricatured, and sometimes they're done as sort of super realistic. And there's Wolverine analogues and Rolling Stone analogues and this sort of thing in it. I really miss Cerebus. I miss that there's someone out there doing that. He's brave enough just to sort of spend all that time doing something like that. And I know he fell out with a lot of people. But yeah, so you don't really see someone who plays about with story and form like he did, and in such a strange, fucking nutty way. So I would take that. Oh, and Flaming Carrot appears in it. I wrote that in my notes because I like Flaming Carrot, and he made me laugh. So Cerebus, Church and State, the second volume, because that's my favourite of the two. Just genius, absolute genius. There you go.
Blimey. Nice one. And that's quite a weighty tome as well.
It's like a phone book. It's like carrying the yellow pages around. That's what it's like. Yeah.
I'm seeing a recurring theme with what Al's picked and what Tony's picked. Dan, what's your second choice?
I went for, well, it's not as big, but a classic nonetheless. A 2000 AD, The Judge Dredd Complete Case Files, Volume 1.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because just an absolutely fantastic read. When I'm on the beach and I'm thinking, God, I'm going to die on this island, I could read 2000 AD and think of far-flung future worlds. And read through the first volume's got, it's just the cream of the crop. Pat Mills, John Wagner writing some of the stories, with Ian Gibson, Dave Gibbons, Brian Boland supplying some of the artwork, and you got
Mike McMahon in it as well, I think.
You got like first appearance of Anderson, Judge Death.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely gold, and I'd want to spend my last hours on the island. My kind of choices are quite a lot morbid than everyone else's. I feel like I'm a bit more of a realist and realised that I'm going to perish on this.
Yeah, you were just talking about your last hours on the island.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that before like Al or Tony just smashes your head in with one of
them? Yeah,
their
I wondered what you were going to say then.
Well,
so I start shouting, "Your wife, my wife now."
Well, I've realised because that's on the horizon. So, like, checking out before then.
I have to wrestle a shirtless owl for you.
Damn, Vince looks on from the bushes.
Dan finishes his book and then just walks out to the sea.
Yeah. I'm going into the sea. I may be sometime. So yeah, kind of. I can't go wrong with a 2000 AD.
No. Well, because I think have they done a colour version of that first volume as well? I think they have, haven't they?
I'm not too sure, actually. I was researching on Amazon and I was like, what's the biggest bang for my buck? I was going to go for a Road Trooper collection. I went, no, I'm going to go for kind of Dread.
Dread gives you shorter, punchier stories, I think, around that period as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Road Trooper tends to be a little bit more drawn out, which I didn't quite like as much, I think.
No. Like when the Dark Judges turn up, and it's like, fucking hell, this is a massive concept for, like, we have, like, nowadays it's a more decompressed storyline and ideas and stories are pulled out more and explored more. Yep. But then it's like one issue, all these characters turn up, they're fucking up Mega City 1, and then they get chased off to their dead world and Ants and Dread follow them and then take them down. And it's like, that's in one issue. And it's just amazing. I mean, nowadays that would be like a run.
Yeah, that'd be an event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like a massive life change, or massive story. And it's like, it's 2008, they just banged it out in one issue.
So when you had stuff like Block War or Boeing or Batties or stuff like that, it just, they were very quick stories, you know.
Yeah. But the concept, like stuff. You say, really, really up there and tight, so well done.
Big ideas, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, right. Shall I read a couple out from the, have you read any out from the Facebook page?
We have not.
No.
Let's see. So I'll read a couple out. Jason Wilson, Nausicaa, Meta Barons, and Uzumaki. And I think someone commented that Uzumaki might give you nightmares. He said he didn't care. Yeah. Johnny Cannon, Alan Davis, Wright Pencillers, Excalibur Run, Walt Simonson's Thor, and Roger Stern and John Buscema, Tom Palmer's Avengers Run. Yeah, great stuff.
The thing about these, though, they're picking runs, and we've only got a book, haven't we? They got to pick a volume.
Yes. You have to prove that it was volume, don't you? Mm. That's it. Yeah. I pointed that out to Ken, and he said Black Dog by Dave McKean, the first BPRD collection, and Sandman, the Kindly Ones. So there he went. Mm. He went
for it. Nice one.
Cool.
Very cerebral.
I can see. Yeah, those choices Ken's made reflects in the work.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah, they do, don't they? That's true.
In a good
actually.
Way.
Yeah. My second choice is going to be stuck on this island. Obviously, you've got the classic books that you've read and you want to reread, but I thought I wanted to go for something that I haven't read. Something substantial.
Yeah, good idea.
That I've always wanted to read, but never sort of gotten around to it, and that would be the first volume of Akira.
Okay.
Yeah.
People said that on the page, didn't they?
Yeah. There's a lot of people out there probably go, "Oh yeah, Akira. Oh, I can't believe you haven't read it." Blah blah blah. But it is. It's quite a daunting because it's so massive. But there's so many volumes of it. It's a daunting task.
I've not read to the end.
Yeah.
No, I haven't either. No.
Someone I know had them, and I read them up to like a stupid number after like Tokyo had been fucked over for that second time, and they was running around in gangs again.
Yeah.
And then I just didn't get to read anymore.
Yeah. Right. So, and each one's about 380 to 400 pages, isn't it? So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. So it's a decent volume, I think. I have noticed when I was looking on Amazon, I did notice that in October this year, there's a 35th anniversary box set of all of them coming out.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
Hardcover, £175 currently on Amazon. But that's probably all the different books in a box, isn't it? I would imagine.
Yeah.
So, if I can't have that, I'm gonna go with volume one and just start at the very beginning. I know it's quite nightmarish, and if you're alone on an island, you'd probably be thinking, "What the hell is going on?" And you might be driven mad. But hell, you know, Dan's already given up on life. So
I'm already contemplating suicide.
I might as well just give up on sanity and just read Akira. Yeah, for
it's
months.
Good to see we'll handle this in different ways.
I just go straight to making a lady out of coconuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Al has become some sort of dictator of an island. He's ruling it with an iron fist. Dan's walking out to the sea, and I've just gone
living inside your head.
I've made a sort of coconut brothel. Yeah. I'm trying to charge you fish to come in. Yeah.
Oh dear. There's some sort of euphemism about nuts in there somewhere. Yeah. So yeah, Akira Volume 1, there's not much I can say about it because I haven't read it and I want to read it, so there you go. So that would be me. Cool. I'd probably be like really sort of neck deep in reading it when someone creeps up behind me and smashes me over the head.
Yeah.
So there you go.
As if Al could summon the strength to lift it after being on the island for a day or so.
Yeah.
After a diet of coconuts.
Yeah. Just after putting seawater up your anus.
He's trading all these fish to go into the Tony's brothel. So there's no protein going on.
I'm going to call it the Coconut Lounge.
Yeah.
That sounds classy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're nothing but classy on this show.
True.
What would your next choice be, Tony?
Isn't it Dan's turn?
No, he said his second one.
I've done my second one.
You've got to catch up.
All right. Oh, okay, right, okay. My second one would be Mage, the Hero Discovered.
Nice.
You guys read it?
I've read some.
Yeah, I've read some of it, yeah. But not all of it.
Right. It's weird.
You have it as your avatar.
Yes, I do. My little Skype thing, isn't it? Yeah. I chose it, and then I realised that the third volume's coming out, which I was really pleased about. So it's by Matt Wagner. Art by Matt Wagner, and issues 6 to 15, I didn't realise this at the time, but Sam Keith helps out on the inks, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 15 issues, February 84 to December 1986. I just think if I'm away on an island, I'm going to want something to me a little bit of my life before it just came to an end and I had to live with you three bastards.
And Dad's not going to be here long, don't worry.
Okay. And Mabel, the coconut lady. It was a book that I read very much. I think when you're a teenager, you're kind of in your formative years, aren't you? And I think when I was sort of in my mid-teens, I was reading this, and a bit of big effect on me. And I really, really is Kevin Matchstick is the central character for those that haven't read it, and he's a sort of guy who's sort of discovering his destiny and his personality, and he makes a lot of bad mistakes. There's a lot of parallels throughout it to Arthurian legend. Kevin Matchstick wields a glowing baseball bat, which is clearly Excalibur. He meets a quirky wizard called Mirth, who may or may not be Merlin, aka the World Mage. And it's a sort of he's a sort of fallible and cynical hero who's prone to sort of a lot of self-doubt and on occasion over self-confidence. He gets his ass handed to him quite a lot by creatures he fights. And at moments he's sort of this sort of everyman, sort of lonely everyman. So it was a really interesting exercise back in the 80s. You know, a lot of comics, you know, you got to remember first comics was about the Turtles and the Elementals. And, you know, there's a lot of experimentation going on in comics at the time. And I really liked it. It's a real sort of classic design. He's got that almost a Shazam style design to his T-shirt. And he basically his T-shirt, combat trousers and a baseball bat that glows. So it's kind of cool. To me at the time, I thought this is a bit different. One memorable bit I always remember is he gets locked in a cell with a couple of guys and he's sort of telling them, oh, you know, I'm a superhero. And they're going, nah, you're not. And he says, oh, go on then, punch me in the stomach. You know, typical punch me in the stomach in the pub. And they punch him in the stomach and it really hurts. And he sort of falls over and starts throwing up and stuff. that gives you a little taste. And he comes through on occasion, but on occasion he just fucks it up. You know, it's because he's an idiot. He looks exactly like Matt Wagner, and the way Matt Wagner's drawn the three volumes, as far as I can see from the teaser pages from the third one, it's Matt Wagner aging through the years, because there's decades between these books, you know. I'd read anything that Wagner did. He's just fucking brilliant. I don't know if you guys have read much by him, but he's done some recent Shadow stuff with Dynamite. It's just been really, really good. I've really enjoyed it. The art starts off in volume one as a little bit raw compared to his later work. He finds his feet solidly by the last few issues, and it leads into Mage the Hero Defined, which has got, I'm going to say, slightly more of an animation look to it. almost animation cell look to it. But, you know, still clean, still a great read. And he develops the heroes into a sort of almost a superhero team, and it becomes more of a sort of road trip. The first one's a sort of slightly bleak road to discovery where you never know he's going to survive, and the sequel becomes this sort of road trip to do stuff with a little group of heroes who he develops. And he's recently, the final volume is going to be called The Hero Denied, which is a really good idea. It's, I'm going to say it's kind of Kevin Matchstick The Wilderness Years, and I think it comes out in June. Really, really good stuff. And it would just remind me a bit of home. I remember sort of drawing on my school bag the sort of lightning strike design, you know, and it was little phrases that came out. And it was actually quite a hard book to come by. You had to spend a few quid to find some of the back issues from Kimiko, who have long gone since, but did put out some excellent books. And they also put out Grendel and the aforementioned Elementals. They did some really good stuff back then. Yeah, really good. So that would be Mage. That would be the first volume of it.
Nice.
Nice one.
Nice. So who's going to go first with their last choice?
Here you go, Vince.
Here you go, Vince.
Okay. Well, I've slightly changed up on this one. I did have an original pick, but listening to Al, he had such a good idea that I've kind of stolen his good idea. On this island, you kind of... Things are going to be tough, aren't they? They're going to be difficult. So you want something to remind you of better times, or like something that just brings back memories of like when you were a kid and growing up, and reading comics was, I don't know, just the be all and end all of everything. You
yeah.
know? And this, for me, I'm going to pick, it's an X-Men omnibus. It's the Chris Claremont and Jim Lee volume 1.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I almost picked an X-Men omnibus as well.
Yeah. Now, looking at it, this one that I saw on Amazon is a hardcover and is about 780 pages. But those, you know, the Claremont and Lee X-Men, that was when it hit me at just the right moment. And I was just those loving all of that. Yeah. And it was just, I will never, even though some characters or art styles maybe haven't dated as well, all the colouring or whatever, I will never get bored of that sort of period in comics when, like, Jim Lee was on X-Men and stuff. Because I was just hooked. You know, from when I was a kid, in the first moment you see Jim Lee's artwork, I was in, and I just love. Look on Amazon; these things are hundreds and hundreds of pounds now. You're lucky to find them. But just to be able to sit down and read from the beginning, and I think it's two volumes of their work, Claremont and Lee, actually. But I think I start off with the first one. That was, you know, like. I guess Rogue in the Savage Land with Magneto and stuff, classic stories when Rogue came back from the dead. That was a pivotal issue for me, that was.
Yep. So that starts in Uncanny, then moves into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they really built up that sort of relationship, didn't they? Working relationship, and certainly built up the fan base. So that when X-Men got its own sort of independent series, you could say. There was Uncanny and there was X-Men, wasn't it? You know, it was everyone was just clamouring for it, wasn't it? It would have to be an X-Men omnibus, because I think when I was a kid, X-Men were the big heroes for me. They were the number one for me.
Yeah, I think they really were, weren't they?
Yeah.
And I think Claremont, as much as I find him quite annoying, he did write as a family, didn't he? I think, which is what appealed to everyone.
Yeah,
they weren't all perfect, but they all sort of were stuck together, didn't they, I suppose?
Yeah.
Put it that way, you know.
Yeah.
You can set up a lot of those kind of team tropes, you know, in comics.
Yeah. Totally. So that'd be my one.
I almost went Dark Phoenix for mine, actually. I didn't in the end, but because I've read it so many times. But I think the Dark Phoenix Burn Claremont Austin series was good as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be my one. Dan, come on. You're in a dark place. Has your third pick just brought you back from the edge?
It's gone a bit darker.
Oh, God.
I've chosen Martial Law, the deluxe edition.
Oh, God.
So, Pat Mills, Kevin O'Neill. This comic came along. It was before Toxic. I was introduced to it, but we were friends in school, like secondary school. We were all kind of reading Marvel, a bit of DC, and 2000 AD. And then my friend brought in the trade of the martial law, the one where he goes up against the public spirit. And I was like, this is fucking awesome. And I hadn't really seen superheroes kind of deconstructed like that. and it just had such a great effect on me. I loved it. So without a shadow of a doubt, if I could have access to every single martial arts story like this book has, that would be my thing. And it's a big old chunky tome as well.
Man.
It's something I don't actually own in real life, but I'm going to consider getting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great hardback, isn't it? DC brought that hardback out, didn't they, of it all?
Yeah.
That was good. Nice. Very good.
Tony.
Yeah, that's a dense read as well. There's a lot to it. It'd take you a while, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
and you can walk over every panel a couple of times where you're missing all the kind of little jokes that Kevin O'Neill's putting in the background.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
So what's your final book pick, Tony?
Well, I was feeling a little bit guilty because I hadn't chosen any Marvel. And I'm a big Marvel fan. And I was thinking, like you, should I do the X-Men one that I loved, you know, the Dark Phoenix? And I thought, no, I've read it too many times. I know it too well. You know, I can blink my eyes and remember panels from it. And I was going to do some... I was obviously going to do Master... A lot of probably bored of me talking about it. And then I was going to do some Avengers. But I thought, it's the same again. I know it all by heart. You know, I can remember every Avengers cover, you know, through its sort of first 300 issues. So I went for something I haven't read for a while, and it's one of the Essentials. So I picked it up off the shelf, and it's Essential Marvel Team Up Volume 3. And it covers the period of issues 52 to 73 and issue 75. I'm not sure why they missed an issue. And it has the X-Men annual one in it. I think if I'm on an island, I'm going to want that Marvel book. I'm going to want to remember those characters, because when we're growing up as a kid and you're reading comics, you know, the Marvel and DC characters were kind of our mates, weren't they, in a way? Yeah. We knew them, didn't we? We knew who they were. And I think that would, you know, a little bit of familiarity of nostalgia would help me. This volume's got some absolute fucking brilliant talent in it. It's got the aforementioned John Byrne, who's with Claremont again. It's Sal Buscema, Bill Mantlow. Just brilliant stuff. It's got stories that feature probably the UK Marvel's probably favourite issues of Marvel Team Up would be the two Captain Britain Spider-Man issues, which is a really good Byrne story. Just absolutely fits into the continuity. You know, he visits New York and bumps into Spider-Man, and they have this adventure. Really good stuff. It's also got one of my favourite, just fucking mental stories in Marvel, which is the one where Spider-Man teamed up with the Hulk, and they came across, yes, this is a real character called Wood God. Do you remember that one?
Wood God,
yeah.
No.
Sort of slightly centaur-looking character without the back end. really, really strange. I remember reading, I read it initially in the black and white Marvel UK reprints, and thinking, this is just fucking nuts.
Yeah.
But it's got some amazing stuff in it. It's got a brilliant Havoc story in it. The Falcon's in it. Strange by Byrne just looks amazing. It's got a Nick Fury story, a Black Widow story. Human Torch appears in it. Now, Human Torch was a sort of favourite and has historically been a friend of Spider-Man, hasn't he? And a sort of appeared with him. Iron Man. And it's got an Iron Fist story, which is actually a big part of Iron Fist lore, which is where the character turns up from Kunlun and tries to steal the tattoo from him. It's quite a good one. Man-Thing's in it, one of my favourite characters, Tigra, and the Beast, and just loads and loads of characters. With Marvel Team Up there, they used to, like, one character say, oh, I'm going to ring the X-Men now, and the Beast would answer the phone and say, we're not available, we're doing something else, and they go, oh, I'd ring the Avengers now, or Thor would fly over and join in and help with something, yeah, and stuff like that. Real fun stuff. It wasn't encumbered by it being part of a big crossover. It wasn't encumbered by it being part of a huge storyline. There are a couple of little strands of story that feature throughout a couple of the issues, but there's no over complication to it. And I think I could read a couple of maybe three or four pages a day, and it'd keep me happy. One of those sort of ones. So, Essential Marvel Team Up Volume 3. That's my one. There you go.
Nice. We all went a little bit nostalgic at the end.
We did it at the end, didn't we? Yeah.
Apart from Dan. He's a very,
it's been dark.
Very dark human being.
The Spider-Man Venom was pretty nostalgic.
That's true. Yeah. You used that in the first one, though, didn't you? And then everything
listen
went dark.
Listen to that back, Tony, yeah. When the betrayal.
I'm watering that, yeah.
The betrayal of my brother.
Oh, no.
Well, just you wait. Right, okay. Let's
put Cain and Abel in the shade.
should we read out a couple of the Facebook ones?
Let's do that, and then we'll get on to our movies.
Oh, yes. So we've got The Inkel, Day Tripper, and The Absolute Dark Knight by Michael Robertson. We've got Simon Russell, Eddie Campbell's complete Alec, Eddie Campbell's complete Bacchus. I think he's fond of Eddie Campbell. Yeah. And either Linda Barry Syllabus or Lorenzo Maton. One Year with Tom Sable, One Year Wiser by Mike Medaglia, which I'm a big fan of. First volume of Akira, and collected volume of Cerebus. So there's a bit more Cerebus love going on there.
Cool.
Pete Davis, because he loves a bit of trouble, asked if Comixology is allowed. I ignored that because clearly it's not, Pete. They're the rules. Gareth Hopkins, definitely Revere by John Smith and Simon Harrison. Past that is Two Sophie's Choice, and I won't do it. He put his foot down. I quite like that. Luke Condor, Day Tripper. Day Tripper is so good. Have you guys read Day Tripper?
No.
Oh, so good. Sweet Tooth and Sandman. He didn't choose a particular volume, so he can't come to the island. Probably won't be upset. Gareth Lighthome, Heartbreak Soup by the Hernandez Brothers, Cages by Dave McKean, and then it's either Guys by Dave Sim, which is a Cerebus book, or a collected Sandman, he guests. Yeah, really good. We got some really good responses on this, actually. Some people who went deep on it. They were really, really thoughtful. Stuart McKeon, The Complete Locust by Jamie Hernandez. Love and Rockets got a lot of love, didn't it? Hernandez Brothers. Hard-boiled Detective Stories by Charles Burns, and Prince Name of the Submariner by Stanley and Gene Colan. Oh, Gene Colan rules. We all know that. And then Simon Robbins did it. He mentioned that Akira 35th anniversary box set, which you did.
Yeah.
But yeah, really good stuff. Go on, I'm just trying to read through them. You crack on with a couple, what you want to say, and I'll find some more.
Well, the thing that we've got to talk about now, we've all picked a movie.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be short and sharp here.
Okay.
I can see the storm cloud brewing. So, yeah. Al got washed away, so who knows? Yeah. We could be washed away at any moment.
I've walked into the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan's up to his knees, so we need to talk to him now before he goes underneath. So you can go first, Dan. What is your movie pick for the island?
I had two. One was
this is not the rules.
No. Okay, I'll keep it to one. I want to go for Big Lebowski.
Oh, you wanker! That's what I was going to do.
You're going to go Big. there was a
I'm
couple of comedy films.
I'm choosing another one now. But you got.
I was going to go Big Lebowski, The Life Aquatic, which is one of my favourites, or Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh yes.
Just to keep me laughing. And there's never a time I've kind of go through periods where I don't watch The Big Lebowski for a little while, and then I'll see something that reminds me, put it on, and it's just like, fucking hell, why did I not watch this in such a long time? It's fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant. So I've come back to the beach to watch The Big Lebowski, and I'm laughing.
Oh, yes, he's been brought back from the edge by the dude.
There's so many lines, but one of my favourites I saw a bit of it the other day was when he goes up to the girl and she goes, "I'll suck your cock for $1,000," and he goes, "I'm just going to go to the cash point."
Yeah,
just stupid bits like that make me laugh so much.
And Jeff Bridges' scream when they throw a ferret into the bath with him makes me laugh.
Drop down to 15 mph. I'm going to roll out with a Uzi, double back. I'm going to beat out one of them.
And the classic, this is what happens when you try to fuck a stranger in the ass.
That's
so good.
One of the ones I always do at work is, you know, when he's in Jackie Treehorn's house and he's on the phone talking.
Yeah.
And then he goes up, like, does the pencil scribble over the top to see what he was writing. Yeah. This is a picture of a knob. The first time in the film he's shown any initiative,
and that's what he goes for it. Oh dear, yeah, good choice. What would your movie pick be, Tony?
I was going to choose that. Yeah, I was definitely going to choose Lebowski because I think it is one of those rewatchable movies, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go. I think I'm going to go Fitzcarraldo. By Werner Herzog with Klaus Kinski. Have you guys seen that?
Bloody hell.
I've let myself down there, haven't I?
That's the one where... Is that the one where Klaus Kinski went absolutely mental on the set?
Hell, he goes absolutely spastic on that set. Yeah. Don't say that, three words. But he does. If you watch... I think they did a film about it. I can't think... It's called something like Field of Dreams. I know it's something like that.
Yeah. It was talking about like that nightmarish making of, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, and there's a film called My Best Fiend, which is where Werner Herzog makes a film about Klaus Kinski. Klaus Kinski is the craziest person ever in the history of the world. If you watch the movie, you can see it in his eyes. He's a man with a lot of danger in his eyes, isn't he?
Yeah.
Kinski. Basically, the story is they try and get a boat over a hill so they can make it into an opera house. And I've never seen the end of it. I enjoyed it so much. It sounds slightly pretentious, yeah, but I enjoyed the movie so much, and I'm such a huge Werner Herzog fan. I didn't want to see the end of it, so I turned it off, and I've never seen the end of it, and that, I don't wish to.
I tell you what, that is the biggest load of bollocks I've ever heard come out of your mouth. you like a film so much, you didn't finish watching it.
Well, I didn't want to see this happy ending. I didn't want to see some hugely, like, oh, look, we did it, here's a happy ending. I wanted to see, I wanted to live in the moment of this, like, disastrous, horrible junk. And I just thought, oh, if they go over the hill and it's all happy and they sail away and someone's singing opera, I don't want to see that. It's going to do my brain in and it's going to make me hate Werner Herzog because he's made this sort of happy ending. So I purposely turned it off. And I don't want to, I don't want anyone to write in and tell me what the ending is, but I may well give in on the island and watch it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I may well, because I enjoy it so much. It's just such an incredible feat of a film, and without the aid of CGI and special effects and stuff, they actually take a boat over the hill. I mean, in the making of it, they get attacked by another tribe who think they've stolen their prostitutes, and people die in the making of this film. It's just incredible. The scene, I dare you to Google and YouTube Kinski going mad at one of the cameramen. I think it's the director of photography. He just goes crazy at him. I've never seen anyone go quite so crazy, and the director of photography just sort of stands there. There's this sort of gaunt 70s guy smoking a cigarette, just staring at him. It's incredible. I mean, I'm a huge Herzog fan. The fact that he had a bet with someone about, he said to another filmmaker, if you make this film, I'll eat my shoe, and the filmmaker made it. So Werner Herzog went off and made a film about eating his shoe. And there's a short film called Werner Herzog Eats His Shoe, where he decides how he's going to cook it, what kind of spices he's going to eat, you know, and then he eats his shoe in it. And I think Herzog is one of those sort of honest film up until plays a villain. I'm a big fan of his stuff. I just think he's incredible. If you watch the he did an interview with Mark Kermode where he gets shot in the middle of the interview. Have you ever seen that one?
Fucking hell.
No, he gets shot by someone. I think it's only with like a 2.2 or a high powered air rifle, but Kermode sort of dives for cover and Herzog said, I've been shot, you know. And he
it's like that fucking mental who the guy about Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes, I can't think of his name. Yeah,
Hunter Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson. Yeah.
And there's like a video interview when he's on like his ranch and he's having like a casual gunfight with his neighbour. he starts saying, shooting fucking birdshot, and he's firing a pistol back at him.
He was a proper gun nut towards the end.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
Google that, because that's YouTube. It's fucking hilarious.
Oh God. God.
But Herzog and Kinski both planned to kill each other, didn't they? They actually almost went through with it. I think Herzog turned up at Kinski's house and hid outside with a gun, wishing to kill him or something. Yeah. It's just
they don't make them like that anymore, talk,
man.
Yeah. They don't, mate. They don't, and that's what I'm getting. Yeah. I want to see films that have got that fucking passion and that edge to them. You know, I don't want to see a CGI film of bunions or something or whatever.
I think
they're called minions, aren't they? Minions. Yeah.
Films have moved now just to product.
Yeah.
And I've got very little interest in a lot of the stuff that comes out of the cinema nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, completely. But I mean, I've got the box set of Fitzcarraldo, Aguirre, Wrath of God, Nosferatu, and there's some fucking amazing. There's just quickly before I go off the subject, we change something else. There's a film he did, I think it's called The Wheel of Life or something like that, where he goes and meets the Dalai Lama. Have you guys seen that? It's a documentary.
No.
And he follows all the follows all those people who go on this sort of, you know, life-changing journey to meet the Dalai Lama. And he's sitting there with the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama's trying to explain to him, you know, the nature of, you know, his religion. He says, look, you know, he said Buddha could be here. He could be you. He could be me. And Herzog says, well, he's definitely not my ex-wife. And the Dalai Lama just sort of is completely and utterly confused by this sort of almost carry-on joke that Herzog clearly thinks it's fucking funny and sort of looks around. And I think that's the best filmmaker ever. The one who spends all this time trying to talk the Dalai Lama into an interview and he just throws it like a Sid James-esque joke into the middle of it. Genius. Yeah, there you go.
There was a joke I saw the other day with an American TV presenter trying to talk to the Dalai Lama. He said, the Dalai Lama goes into a pizza restaurant and says, I want one with everything.
and the dumb just so goes over his head. There's like a massive language barrier, and he's looking around.
Oh dear. Anyway, yeah, two very interesting film choices. My one, pure and simple, would just be Predator.
Yes,
I could watch that forever. I could watch that a million times. I could quote it, and also there's probably some decent survival tips for making giant traps. So
yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You don't think you'd get a bit bored with it, Vince?
No.
Every day, oh, let's put a film on. We're good. Oh, fuck me, not Predator again.
It's a strange bit of trivia, but I've watched that film backwards.
Oh, you told me that. Yeah.
Backwards.
Yeah. Me and a friend were watching it on VHS, and you put the VHS in, and you're like, oh no, it's the end of the film, we've got to rewind it. And we pressed the button to rewind, but it just started playing it backwards. It didn't like properly do it, so we just decided to watch the whole film in reverse.
It's a lovely story about an extraterrestrial bringing people back from the dead.
Exactly. Oh dear. Yeah,
so it becomes Highway to Heaven. People keep going back from the dead.
Yeah.
Oh dear, but we're more topless men.
Yeah.
Right, so our last thing to keep us sane was an album.
Oh yes, you go first, you guys. I'm not sure of mine yet.
Okay.
I'm going pure nostalgia on mine. It's really old school, and I'm probably going to roll our eyes, but mine's going to be a Metallica album, the Black Album.
Oh, okay.
Just nice. Go totally old school. Bring back memories of my teenage years.
Yeah.
It's got some really good tracks on it as well. So that's what I'm going to go for.
It's a quality album, that one. Very cool.
Yeah. I've not listened to it its entirety for years. You know, kind of iPhones, iPods, basically, well, I'd stick everything on shuffle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rarely do I
you
listen
like a shuffle,
to
don't you?
Yes. Is that a masturbatory joke?
Only if you make it so.
So yeah, kind of, you know, you just kind of listen to it in the old order, but it's an album I listened to a lot in my youth. And
that is a quality choice. I've gone for something a bit old school as well, and I'm taking the chance to choose another greatest hits. I know it's three CDs, and that's probably the greatest hits of Queen.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've had that on in the car, and it's just. There's just so many tunes on it from so many different decades. I love a bit of Radio Gaga. Obviously, there's the classic We Will Rock You, etc. And everyone needs a bit of time for Fat Bottom Girls now and then, don't they?
As long as it's got the Flash theme.
Oh, it's got it all. It's got it all, mate. Flash is on there. Ace. Yeah. It's all on there. It's amazing. And also, when you're walking out into the sea, I can play Who Wants to Live Forever. And like make it a really magical moment.
Oh, that is, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. So I was friend now singing that fucking song from Highlander.
Which one? What are you talking about? The TV show? I am immortal. I have inside me blood of kings. Obviously, yes, he sings
exactly
it a bit better than that.
Yep.
Yeah. Go on then, Tony. What album? This is going to be interesting. What album is this going to be?
Well, this is an album I'll never listen to the end of.
Is it Captain Beefheart?
Oh, it's almost. It's it's the Alabama 3. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you will have heard of them because they do the theme to The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Woke up this morning, bought myself a gun, which is... everyone goes, oh, they must be some sort of American band, but they're not. They're a Brixton band. So I'm going for their greatest hits. Let's do a greatest hits again. Yeah. They're probably the band that I've seen the most. I've seen them like, I don't know, 10, 15 times. Just really like their stuff. They did Woke Up This Morning, which is just fucking amazing. Larry Love and the very Reverend Dr. D. Wayne Love are the two sort of kind of singers in the band. There's a big old orchestra of them. There's loads of them sort of hanging about and playing, you know, mouth organs and saxophones and backing singers and guitars and keyboards. You know, they're one of these sort of big sort of performance things. And the Reverend Dr. D. Wayne comes in. You remember how James Brown used to come in handcuffs and, you know, like he's got two guards with him and he'd do sort of, you know, collapse or something. He'd do, well, they do a bit of that. He comes in with some prison guards and they undo the handcuffs and then he sort of kicks off. And I for a while looked quite a lot like him, which used to get pointed out quite a lot. It was quite funny because he's just this sort of terribly sweary alcoholic guy in, I think, in real life. they did some great. They did "I Ain't Going to Goa," which is just a brilliant song. "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash." Mao Zedong said, "You don't dance to techno, hip hop, or electro." That's a great song. I think you'd like that one. "Hypno Full of Love," just brilliant stuff. I hate him because I'm not into sixth form writing, but they did quote them as the best touring band for about 3 years running. Yeah, if you don't know the Alabama Three, go and find them because they're a good band. They're nice. Singing along. There's a couple of chill out tracks on there. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, good stuff.
It's going to be quite a, like the different sections of the island are going to be quite different, aren't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
Viking would be the best. The
just because you've got the coconut lounge.
Yeah.
Dan's got the darkest corner. As Metallica is playing Enter Sandman, blasting.
Yeah. I wouldn't say Metallica are too dark, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Queen and Metallica. There's quite a harsh
and there's,
contrast
then
there.
And then there's Al with the Pet Shop Boys blasting out of his paper mache fortress.
Amazing. SHOPING, let's go shopping. That's what shouts.
So there you go, folks. It was crazy. It was carnage. It was tropical and topical. It was the. Thanks. It was a desert island comics.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's quite good. That was quite a good idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's all right, wasn't it?
A bit of fun. Yeah. And it was.
I said we should have gone for Castaway Comics, but they got poo-pooed. by me mainly. So.
He both brought that idea in and got rid of it in the space of 5 seconds.
Yeah, space of a breath.
Yeah. So
and loads of people joined in as well on the Facebook. Yeah. So if you haven't seen what everyone else chose, go along and see what they did. Some great books suggested there. Yeah.
Get on that thread and let us know what you thought of our choices.
It's hard. It's fucking hard.
It is.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. I've changed 4 or 5 times on mine. I've got to tell you. Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Yeah. Wasn't that a load of old fun?
Wilson! Wilson! Wilson!
So there you have it, folks. It was unconventional, but
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? You likely thought about it as well. It really had, didn't he?
Yeah, he thought about it a lot more than I had in terms of survival. Yeah. Yeah, and if you haven't read any of what Al's putting out at the moment, please, please do.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, so good.
It's real good stuff. Yeah.
We're really chuffed to have him on, weren't we? A lot of people said, "Oh, that's a good guest to get on," because he's really happening at Marvel. He writes some really intelligent stuff over there. You know, and he came from a UK small press scene. Yeah. You know, which is ideal. So you know, a lot of people want to do that, don't they?
And he was willing to get stuck in with the madness that we call the Awesome Comics Pod.
He was. Yeah.
Which goes a long way, and. So thank you very much to Al, and also thank you to our sponsor. Yes, this episode is brought to you by us, but it's got the help of those fine people of Comic House. They're doing the great work for the indie scene at the moment at comichouse.com, where you can find print issues, etc. But at the moment they've got a Kickstarter they want to shout about. I think they've got, is it a week left?
Okay.
Yeah, I think about a week or so left. And what they're basically doing, they're putting together an app, which is streaming comics. It's like Netflix for indie comics. So, you know, how can you not want that in your life? I know when we talked about it on last week's show, there was a lot of our listeners who didn't know about it, who thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah.
It's a comic subscription app that basically, if you like discovering comics, like we know you do because you're like us, only more respectable. So this is the app for you, and it will actively support the independent creators behind them, not only by getting the word out but also like royalty wise and stuff, because all the revenue is split 50-50 that was mouthful with indie creators. It's going to be on tablet and mobile, iOS and Android, and will be free to download. But it basically works. You have a monthly subscription fee of just £3, and you get access to the entire library of comics on Comic House.
That's brilliant.
Which is, in terms of price, that's absolutely bang on, £3.
You can't beat that, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was buying digital comics from the big two this week, and I was paying £2.49
for
a 20-page comic.
I kind of recently, the view that Tom Ward has taken, as soon as you go and got your gun, your comic done, just get it out there on digital. Yeah. Get people reading it. That's the best thing to do, because like the digital, your product's already been made and done.
Yeah.
Get it out there cheap on digital. Get more people eyes on it, so they're interested in the stuff you're doing now.
If you're doing conventions all over the place, then yes, you know, the print copies, you can sell them. But you know, when you don't have a convention, how are people going to be able to pick this up and read it? You know, I mean, not everyone has a big cartel. That's myself included. Whereas if it's available digitally, then people can just, you know, a couple of clicks and they can read your comic, and you could get so many fans that way. I know there's a couple of listeners on this show that have picked up my book on Comixology. Which is brilliant. So this sort of avenue is brilliant. And if it's helping the small press scene, we're fully behind it. And the Comic House guys are all about professionalism and putting out the best possible stuff. So, check it out. Go to Kickstarter at the moment and search for Comic House. You will find it. It's a really, you know, it gives you all the info you need as well, which is brilliant. So well worth your time, and check it out. So thank you very much to those guys. And we don't have any recommendations this week, because we've talked about so many amazing books that we spoiled you. We've had an amazing guest, and we've talked about so many great stuff that you should read them anyway. That's what this whole show's been a recommendation, hasn't it?
I think so. Go and read Al's books. Read our recommended books. Yeah, it's been a good one.
And there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to let us know how much you enjoyed this show. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We have a bit of a indie comic character jam piece going on at the moment. We've got some, even more have been added to the piece this week.
We've got a couple of spaces in it, I'd say, haven't we?
Yeah,
it's fucking looking great.
It's going to be in London Super Comic Con when we launch this print. It's going to look quite amazing. It's so much fun to do, and we truly appreciate seeing all these great characters out there. So if you've got a character that you want to send to us, send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We'd like it high res, .png, if I remember correctly, Dan.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so it's got a transparent background and all that jazz. And they're kind of jumping in the air, aren't they? They're kind of like, you know,
essentially,
So just
Going with PNG, are you? That's a good idea.
Yeah. What does it mean, Tony?
I haven't got a fucking clue.
It's PNG. Is it portable network graphic?
I think it stands. I think you'll find, Daniel, that it stands for ping pong. I think that's where it goes.
or peanut.
Nut. Peanut.
Peanut nut.
Yeah. I don't know. Ganglion.
Peanut nut ganglion. That's what it means. So send us one of those. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be talking about what the next coming shows are going to be all about. We've got a very good writer on next week's. Another great writer on the show next week. So, we'll release that in the next couple of days. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the Awesome Comics Talk group that we're talking about it more and more every week. And it's just, it's great. It's good fun.
It's the only place
on Facebook I really read.
Yeah, I think I'm me now.
Unless there's like cute videos of ducklings jumping into a river.
It's the only reason to go on social media till after Thursday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. I see what you did there, Dan.
Or even beyond then, because I'm sure Friday it'll be as bad either way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Up or down again. Hooray. Yeah.
if you want a smile, go to Awesome Comics Talk. So there you go.
No politics.
And no politics here. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a smashing review, because it helps get the word out. And we're all about getting the word out on this show.
Yep.
Yeah. I was expecting someone else to back me up on that, and that was all I got.
I went, mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I nodded.
Oh, dear, we're pros on this show. That's why we work in the Coconut Lounge. Thank you for listening. if you listen to us on Stitcher or the Podnose Network, also send us a nice review because it helps get the word out. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz is my Twitter. And if you go to neverironanything.blogspot.com, you'll see I've done a preview of the newest Snowbrow book, Fantasy Sports, which is fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I was speaking to Sam Webster about it today, saying it's right up his street, and he ordered it straight away, as awesome. Did a few people after seeing nice. Some of the pictures. Yeah, really good.
Nice. You've
really
good about, stuff. You've talked about that one on the show before as well, I remember.
Yeah, the second volume I talked about. Yeah, it's like a yearly volume. It's like a sort of French approach to bringing out a volume a year, and he does so well in it, Sam Bosman. Really nice stuff. Yeah, very
awesome.
Good.
Awesome. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. We're now back to 2 updates a week.
Hey.
So... check. Should have this issue to bed by mid-July, I think.
Oh, cool.
I'm pretty much going to go straight into issue 14 afterwards, no break, because I want try and get 2 issues done a year, and if I have more than a break of a couple of weeks, it kind of Fs it up.
You are a monster, Daniel Butcher.
It's all about giving.
Well,
yeah, isn't it always? Prison rules.
Prison rules.
Never be receiving.
Oh, can I say
in American football.
Oh, dear God. Well, you can find me online at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. It's been a fun one. It's been a crazy one. Despite the tropical storms, and we've had minimal technical issues, and none of us have died yet. Oh, hang on. No, Dan's walking out to the sea as we speak. So thank you for listening, folks. And from Al, Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya. Do you like this skirt I've made out of leaves? Sexy, isn't it? Look at me bend over in it.
Oh,
nice.
dear God. Hang on. All the trees on this island have got green leaves. Why are they all brown?
I see inside one of my copies I've slipped an elemental sex special one. Just for the lads. You're not here, are you, Tony?
No! I'm not here.
I don't know why I bother. I'm going to do that bit again, you wankers.
No. That wasn't even fucking planned. Well, that messed me up.
Fuck's sake. Well, there's the outtake.
Go ahead.
Right.
It's totally straight.
Yeah,
first time you've been totally straight.
There's the outtake.
Right.
Straight face.
Right. For fuck's sake.
I'm not here. Forget I'm here.
If only. What a fucking mess.
Oh, just making the edit more joyous.